As in nearly any game, the pace was slow and cautious at first as the players got to know one another and gauged the strength of their opposition. Conrad kept his bets reasonably small, considering the stakes, and didn't try anything fancy. He seldom bluffed, just enough to let the other men know that he was capable of it, and by the time a couple of hours had gone past, he was up a few $100s. The players took a short break to stretch their legs. Edgar Pennyworth smoked a fat cigar, while Fred Montgomery filled a pipe and puffed on it. Bernard Church had one drink, a short, neat whiskey. When the six men returned to the table, the feeling in the air was more tense than it had been earlier. Things would begin to get more serious. Midnight rolled past. The room was fairly quiet. The hostesses weren't being kept very busy fetching drinks, so some of them sat down and dozed in the armchairs. Bat Masterson, as the organizer of the tournament, wasn't playing. He strolled from table to table, a cigar clenched in his teeth, and kept up with the action. As Conrad could have predicted, Fred Montgomery was the first one to grow impatient and start taking more risks. He won a couple of big pots with daring plays, but lost even more. When his pile of chips began to shrink, he called Masterson over.
I need 5,000 more, Bat.
Of course. Anyone else?
J.D. Wilson, who had lost several hands in a row, also bought more chips. They turned their money over to Masterson, and one of the hostesses delivered the chips. Play resumed. Montgomery's luck didn't change. His stake continued to dwindle. He bought his other 5,000 in chips. By 6 o'clock in the morning, he was down to his last 1,000. With an annoyed grimace, he shoved the chips into the pot to call when he, Conrad, and Pennyworth were the last ones left in the hand. Pennyworth took the pot with 4 tens. Conrad saw the anger flash in Montgomery's eyes, and for a second he thought the railroader was going to lose his temper and cause a scene. Masterson hovered nearby, ready to step in quickly if there was trouble. Then Montgomery shook his head.
Oh, looks like I'm busted. But I had a good time, so I reckon it was worth it.
He pushed back his chair and stood up, taking his watch from his pocket to check the time.
Railroad office will be open in a couple hours. I need to get in there and tell my boys to raise the cost of a ticket a little bit. I'll have that 20 grand back in no time.
You don't want to wait and see who wins, Fred?
I'll be back. I don't figure you'll settle things here for a while yet.
Montgomery left, and the other men at the table took a break. The players at several of the other tables had stopped for the moment, too, including table two. Conrad walked over to a long table where coffee and food had been set out. Rance McKinney was there, sipping from a cup of coffee that he had sweetened with something from a silver flask he took from his pocket. He gave Conrad a curt nod of greeting.
Browning, how are you doing?
Fine. How about you?
Don't worry about me. Rest of that bunch can't stay with me.
Was that the rancher's natural arrogance, Conrad wondered, or was the bravado intended to cover up the fact that he wasn't doing as well as he'd expected? That was the potentially major flaw in his plan, Conrad thought. McKinney might not make it out of the first round, and since they had drawn different tables, the effort would have been for nothing. In that case, he would figure out some other way to get to the truth, Conrad told himself. It would just be a minor setback. The food and coffee refreshed the players. No one wanted to take a longer break to catch some sleep. After a while, the game resumed. The hours rolled by. In the windowless room, there was no way of knowing if it was day or night. Conrad took off his coat and tie and rolled up the sleeves of his shirt. The other men got more comfortable, too, as they settled in for the long haul. It was a scene that was repeated at table after table in the room. From time to time, a man would let a curse rip out as the cards didn't fall his way, and he saw the last of his chips being raked in by one of the other players. Of the 48 who had started the tournament the night before, 8 were gone by midday, and several others were perilously close to being wiped out. Sometime early in the afternoon, J.D. Wilson leaned back in his chair at the conclusion of another losing hand.
That's it. I'm done.
The green felt in front of him was empty of chips.
It was a good game, J.D. I hope you'll tell my wife the same thing when she finds out how much I lost. I'm not sure she'll agree that it was worth it.
He shoved back his chair.
But it was. Good luck, gentlemen.
The table was down to 4 players, and visible weariness gripped all of them. Pennyworth, who was the oldest, mopped sweat off his face with a handkerchief.
I think a longer break is in order, if you agree, gents.
Conrad, Roberts, and Church all nodded. Conrad lifted a hand to get Bat Masterson's attention. Masterson, who had been in the room the whole time, somehow looked as fresh and rested as he had when the tournament began.
We're taking a break, Bat. You left someone watch the table?
It'll be just like it is when you come back. I can guarantee that. Go through that door right over there. There are rooms waiting for you. How long do you need?
Conrad looked at the other three men.
A couple hours?
They all nodded.
Someone will wake you. Have a good rest, gentlemen.
Conrad and the other men adjourned to the rooms Masterson had waiting for them. Rose was back at her desk in the outer office of Hudson, Burke, and Hardy when Arturo arrived at the law firm that morning. She greeted him with a smile, obviously remembering him from the day before.
Mr. Vincenzo, isn't it?
That's right.
Arturo took his hat off.
How are you this morning, Miss Sullivan? Recovered from your ordeal last night, I hope?
I suppose Conrad told you all about it?
Of course.
Rose looked around and leaned in close.
We left before the police arrived, so I don't know if it would be a good idea to speak much of it around here.
I understand. I was just inquiring about your health.
I had a headache last night from that knock on the head, but it's gone this morning.
Excellent. I am sure Mr. Browning will be glad to hear it.
Where is he? Oh, yes, that big poker tournament at the palace. I've heard quite a bit of gossip about it. The so-called respectable people won't admit it, of course, but they're just as interested in it as anybody else.
No doubt. Is Mr. Hudson in?
Are you here on Conrad's behalf?
I have some business to discuss with him.
Well, let me see if he's busy.
Conrad had told Arturo about the telephonic communications system between the offices, but Rose didn't use the black box on the desk. Instead, she turned and went through the door behind her, leaving Arturo alone in the outer office. She probably didn't want him to hear what she was going to say about him, he thought. Rose certainly seemed like a pleasant, friendly young woman. It was hard to believe she would have anything to do with a couple of vicious assassination attempts. Yet it made sense. Conrad and Arturo had discussed the matter the previous night before Conrad left for the palace. Arturo had a feeling Conrad hoped he was wrong, but neither of them was willing to rule out the possibility. He thought about going through her desk while she was out of the office, but didn't know how long she would be gone. Besides, if she was cunning enough to do the things they suspected her of, she wouldn't likely leave proof of her part in it lying around where anybody could find it. He waited patiently, and in a few minutes, Rose returned with Julia Moorhead.
Mr. Hudson can see you for a few minutes, Mr. Vincenzo, but only a few.
That's fine, thank you.
Julia ushered him down the hall and into Ellery Hudson's office.
Arturo, what can I do for you? Did Conrad send you?
In a way.
Arturo glanced at the doors, which Julia had closed behind her. She might be just on the other side of them, though, for all he knew. Or she might be in another office, listening through one of those devices. No matter, he would just have to take a chance.
Someone tried to kill Mr. Browning again last night.
Good Lord! What happened this time? Wait a minute. Wasn't he going out to dinner last night with Miss Sullivan before that poker tournament started?
That's exactly right.
Quickly, Arturo told Hudson about how two men had stopped the buggy, then traded shots with Conrad, only to wind up dead.
Since we both represent Mr. Browning in different capacities, I trust that what I've told you will be kept confidential.
Of course. But the police?
He did not wait for the police. The authorities found the two dead men, I'm sure, but have no idea who made them that way.
Good Lord. Why, it seems like every time Conrad is alone with Miss Sullivan, someone tries to...
His voice trailed off as he looked at Arturo, his eyes widening.
Exactly.
Thumbs hooked into his vest pockets. Hudson stood next to his office window.
I don't believe it. I simply don't believe it. If there is any truth to the idea, then Pamela would have had to anticipate every move Conrad is making. She would have had to arrange more than a year ago to plant someone in my office, knowing Conrad would come to see me when his search brought him to Denver.
He and Arturo had been hashing out the situation for long minutes, going over everything that had happened since Conrad's arrival in Denver. Hudson was smart enough to see the possibilities, but he didn't want to accept them.
We've seen evidence in the past that the woman was diabolically cunning. She left behind assassins in Boston to strike at Mr. Browning, and it's certainly conceivable that she could have done the same here. There is also the matter of her cousin Roger, who was deeply involved in her schemes. He was in St. Louis several months ago, not long before Miss Sullivan came to work for you. Perhaps he actually hired her, acting on the late Miss Tarleton's suggestion.
Diabolical is the word for Pamela, all right. The hell that she's put Conrad through. He's put a good face on it, and seems to be in good spirits. but the knowledge that his children are out there somewhere must be tormenting him every hour of the day and night.
Just as Miss Tarleton wanted.
Yes. So what are we to make of Miss Sullivan? Is it really possible that she's a hired killer?
I don't think we can ignore the possibility. But if she is, she'll have to bide her time and wait to strike. She can't get at Mr. Browning while he's engaged in that poker tournament.
Which gives us some time to investigate and find out one way or the other. I like that idea. I'll try to find out more about her background.
And I'll keep an eye on the lady herself. Perhaps she'll meet with her confederates or attempt to recruit some new ones if she no longer has anyone to assist her. After all, Mr. Browning has disposed of the first three men who tried to kill him since he got here.
You say that like you think there'll be more.
Don't you?
As Bat Masterson had promised, after a couple of hours, a waiter rapped on the door of the room where Conrad was sleeping. Even though he was still tired, the break had refreshed him somewhat. He hauled himself out of the narrow bed. Washing up made him feel even better. By the time he got dressed and returned to the room where the tournament was taking place, he felt ready to go for hours. A couple of tables were empty as more players took their breaks, including the one where Rance McKinney had been playing. Conrad spotted Masterson and went over to him.
McKinney didn't get cleaned out, did he?
No, he's sleeping. Actually, I think he's well up on the other players at his table.
That was encouraging. Conrad was lagging behind both Bernard Church and Edgar Pennyworth at his table, but he was still well within striking distance. Masterson was finally starting to look a little ragged around the edges.
You should probably get some rest yourself, Bat.
I intend to. Jack Barton's going to relieve me in a bit.
Conrad was vaguely acquainted with Barton, who had been a gambler, a deputy sheriff, and a Wells Fargo agent. He was a good man, tough and solid. He would keep the game running properly while Masterson was taking a break. The other players had emerged from their rooms and drifted back to the table. Conrad joined them, and the game got underway again. The men had cups of coffee next to them to help keep them alert. By late afternoon, Hal Roberts had dropped out, stood up, left the table, and went into the main room. That left Conrad, Church, and Pennyworth. Conrad saw the look the other two men exchanged. They regarded each other as their only true competition and probably thought of him as just a rich, idle young man who was taking part in the tournament for the thrill of it. Let them believe that, Conrad mused behind a faint smile. He continued his calm, steady play. Church and Pennyworth paid little attention to him. He figured each man had decided his best strategy would be to dispose of the other, leaving only Conrad to beat to become the big winner of the first round. The pots gradually rose in value. Conrad took one now and then, and the gap between his winnings and those of the other two players began to shrink. Church and Pennyworth didn't seem to notice. Suddenly, Pennyworth made his move. He had drawn Church into betting maybe more than he should have. Church had too much money in the pot to drop out. He wouldn't have enough chips left to stay up with the other two players in the next hand. It was win or drop out for Church, so the dapper man had no choice but to shove in all the chips he had in front of him. Pennyworth called, and then, almost as an afterthought, so did Conrad.
Three kings.
Church laid his cards down.
Not quite good enough, my friend. Full house. Sevens over trays.
Pennyworth leaned forward, his chubby hands reaching out to gather his winnings.
Just a minute. I'm still in this hand.
He placed his cards face up on the table. Church and Pennyworth stared in shock at the 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 of clubs.
Straight flush. You haven't gotten a hand that good since this game started, Browning.
Then I guess this was a good time for it.
He reached out and raked the chips into a pile in front of him.
Splendid. To tell you the truth, if I have to be cleaned out, I'd rather it was you who did it instead of this pompous blowhard.
He flicked a hand across the table toward Pennyworth.
Pompous blowhard, is it? Let me remind you, I'm still in the game, Bernard. You're not.
Church pushed back his chair.
That's true.
He grinned at Conrad as he stood up.
Good luck, kid.
A break before we finish this off, Mr. Browning?
Fine by me.
He stood up and stretched, then took out his pocket watch and flipped it open. Almost 8 o'clock in the evening. More than 20 hours had passed since the tournament began, and not a single big winner had emerged yet, although most of the tables were down to 2 or 3 players. Table 2, where Rance McKinney was playing, had 3 men left, including the rancher. Conrad hadn't eaten much during the day. He'd been living mostly on coffee. There would be a chance to eat a good meal and get some real sleep once that round of the tournament was over. Pennyworth was older, and the strain was taking a toll on him, too, though he didn't show it. He was the same amiable, grandfatherly figure he had been when the game started. Bat Masterson had returned to the room a short time earlier, looking considerably refreshed. He strolled over to Conrad.
Down to just two of you, eh?
That's right.
It's really not fair for me to say this, but watch out for Pennyworth, Conrad. He looks harmless, but he's a sly old dog. I suppose you figure that out for yourself by now.
I know he's dangerous.
I wouldn't have said anything, but I know this game is about a lot more than money for you, amigo. I want this whole affair to turn out well for you.
Thanks, Bat. I appreciate that.
Conrad poured a cup of coffee from the pot on the table.
I guess we'd better get on with it.
He took the coffee back to the table. Pennyworth joined him, with a disarming smile that didn't disarm Conrad at all.
Are you ready, my young friend?
Ready.
The deal is yours, I believe.
Conrad shuffled and dealt a hand of standard draw poker, what they had been playing most of the time. He won the hand, but the pot was fairly small. Now that it was only the two of them, maybe Pennyworth planned on playing things close to the vest for a while. Also, since only two of them were left, the importance of each hand was magnified. If either of them got reckless, the game might be over in a hurry. During one of the breaks, Conrad noticed that McKinney's table was down to only two players, the rancher and a burly man with a bald, bullet-shaped head. He didn't look like he'd be much of a poker player, but obviously he was, or he wouldn't still be in the game. Conrad hoped McKinney would be able to finish him off and move on to the next round. Before he and Pennyworth could resume their game, the bald man surged to his feet across the table from McKinney.
You son of a bitch!
One of his ham-like hands swept up the chair where he'd been sitting.
You cleaned me out!
He flung the chair straight at McKinney. McKinney threw his hands up to shield his head from the chair. It crashed into him and knocked him backward in his seat. The bald man lunged across the table at him. Those big paws reached for McKinney's neck. Conrad headed for table two as fast as he could. As fast as Conrad was, Bat Masterson was equally fast, and he was closer. He reached the table a step ahead of Conrad. The gun in his hand rose and fell in a swift, chopping blow that slammed the weapon against the top of that shiny dome. The man slumped forward, senseless. Conrad grabbed the man's collar and rolled him onto the floor. McKinney was on his feet and stepped toward the man, looking like he was about to kick him.
That's enough, Rance. He's not going to cause any more trouble.
That bastard hit me with a chair! Whatever happens to him, he's got it coming.
Masterson didn't exactly point his gun at McKinney, but the barrel swung more in the rancher's general direction.
I said that's enough.
Several of the palace's burly waiters had come rushing in at the sound of the commotion. They were behind Masterson, ready to step in if needed. Conrad stood shoulder to shoulder with the famous ex-lawman. McKinney glowered at all of them.
Fine. I just could never stand a sore loser, that's all.
He gave Conrad an especially dark glare, as if what he had just said applied more to Conrad than any of the others. That was puzzling, but Conrad didn't take the time to ponder it. The man on the floor began to stir.
Roll him onto his back.
When they had done that, Masterson hunkered next to the man and pressed the barrel of the gun he held against the man's nose. The feel of that cold ring of metal made the man's eyes widen.
Listen to me, Hugo. In a minute, you're going to get up and leave. You don't have to apologize, and you don't have to make any sort of restitution for the trouble you've caused. All you have to do is get out of the palace, and don't ever set foot in here again. At least not while I'm here. Do you understand?
Masterson moved the gun enough so the man could jerk his head in a nod.
All right.
Masterson stood up and moved back, but kept his gun trained on the man. Hugo struggled to his feet, shook his head like an old bull, and turned to stumble out. Masterson motioned for some of the waiters to follow him.
Make sure he doesn't cause any more trouble on the way out.
With that taken care of, Masterson holstered his gun and turned back to McKinney.
My apologies for the disturbance, Rance. Are you injured? Do you need medical attention?
I'm fine. You should have shot that big ox, Masterson.
To tell you the truth, I wasn't sure I could bring him down with anything less than a greener. And a wounded beast is even more dangerous, you know. Let's get back to the games, gentlemen.
Conrad went over to table five, where Edgar Pennyworth was standing and waiting for him.
Nothing like a little action to break up the monotony, eh?
I don't think Hugo cared for it.
Don't worry about him. I've seen him around. Always a troublemaker. If Bat hadn't stepped in, he might have broken McKinney's back.
That was doubtful, Conrad thought, because if Masterson hadn't stopped Hugo, he would have. It was odd how he had almost been put in the position of protecting someone he absolutely disliked. He and Pennyworth resumed their game. The hands went back and forth, the momentary advantage flowing to one man, then the other. As the evening progressed, Conrad slowly began to accumulate a larger pile of chips. Pennyworth's jovial smile disappeared. He had thought defeating Conrad wouldn't pose much of a challenge, but he was steadily being proven wrong. Pennyworth began raising more, taking risks like a prize fighter who had grown tired and starts flailing at his opponent. Some of his gambles paid off, but more of them didn't. He threw in 5,000 at a time. Conrad matched it and upped the bet. Pennyworth called, then muttered fiercely under his breath when Conrad's cards turned out to be better. On the next hand, Conrad hesitated. Pennyworth saw that and attacked, not realizing he had just taken the bait Conrad laid out for him. Conrad tossed away a couple of cards and drew two more, prepared to fold if necessary, but the cards surprised him and filled the inside straight he was going after. Still, he raised cautiously. Sensing that he was about to make a recovery, Pennyworth shoved half of what he had left into the center of the table. He sat back and smiled, obviously expecting Conrad to fold. Conrad matched the bet and raised the amount that Pennyworth had left. The older man's shaggy white brows drew down in a surprised frown. His only choices were to fold, which wouldn't leave him with enough of a stake to last more than another hand or two, or call. Like a true gambler, he called.
Three aces.
He laid his cards down, hoping against hope he would somehow emerge victorious.
Sorry, Pennyworth.
Conrad placed his straight on the table. Pennyworth stared at it, all the sparkle going out of his pale blue eyes.
Oh, well, can't win them all, as the old saying goes. You played an excellent game, young man.
Thank you.
Conrad gathered in the chips. He was glad Pennyworth was being gracious in defeat. He felt an instinctive liking for the man. Pennyworth leaned back in his chair and raised a hand.
Obat, we have a winner.
Masterson came over to the table, an expression of disappointment on his face. He thought Pennyworth had won. His expression changed to one of surprise when he saw the pile of chips in front of Conrad.
Well done.
He clapped a hand on Conrad's shoulder, then reached over and shook hands with Pennyworth.
Thank you for playing, Edgar. It's always nice to have a bit of class in a game. Are you going to be around to watch the next round?
Yes, I believe I will. I want to see how this young man does. I suspect his next opponents won't underestimate him as I did.
Probably not.
Conrad gestured toward the chips.
You'll take care of these, Bat?
Of course. What are you going to do?
Oh.
Conrad's muscles creaked as he stood up. He didn't know what time it was, didn't know how long he had been playing, but it felt like a week.
I think I could use some rest, and then maybe a big meal.
We can handle that. You can use the room you used before.
Thanks.
As he started toward the door, he saw Rance McKinney sprawled in one of the armchairs, legs stretched out in front of him, a drink in his hand. Their eyes met for a second, and Conrad saw the cold hatred in the rancher's gaze. He still didn't have any idea what had made McKinney feel that way toward him, but he was convinced it didn't have anything to do with the slight ruckus between the two of them at the palace several nights earlier. No, Conrad realized, McKinney's attitude toward him had changed at Ellery Hudson's dinner party, when he found out who Conrad was. The only reason McKinney would have to hate Conrad Browning would be if Pamela had told the rancher about him, he thought. There was no way of knowing what Pamela had told McKinney, but it couldn't have been anything good. More than ever, he wanted to face McKinney over a poker table. Arturo didn't have any training to be a detective, and he wasn't a frontiersman used to following trails. But he thought he could manage to keep an eye on one young woman. However, the job was turning out to be more difficult than he expected. He had waited in the doorway of a building across the street from the offices of Hudson, Burke, and Hardy, and watched for Rose Sullivan as people began to emerge from the building at the end of the business day. When she came out, wearing a neat hat on her blonde hair, he gave her a chance to get about half a block ahead of him, and then fell in behind her, staying on the other side of the street. He needed a pipe and one of those hats like Sherlock Holmes wore in the illustrations and the stories in the Strand magazine, he thought. But such a getup would just draw attention to him, he decided, so it probably wasn't a good idea after all. The sidewalks were crowded. Arturo picked up his pace, thinking he should get a little closer to Rose, so he wouldn't risk losing sight of her. The blue gown she wore was easy to see. Of course, he realized it was possible she would just go back to the boarding house where she lived, in which case he would follow her again when she went to work in the morning, and trail her home in the afternoon if he needed to. If she was going to plan another attempt on Conrad's life, sooner or later she would have to get in touch with the men who would carry out the actual attack. Unless she had decided she couldn't trust anyone else to do the job and planned to murder Conrad herself. Or unless she was totally innocent, which Arturo considered highly unlikely given everything that had happened so far. He wasn't surprised when she turned down a side street and went into a small, rather dingy restaurant. A sign painted on one of the unwashed windows read, Luigi's. The smells coming from the place as he approached it were surprisingly appetizing. He went down a shadowy alley, grimacing at the thought of what he might be stepping on, and found a door at the back. A slender, balding, sharp-featured man with a soup strainer mustache answered his knock.
Are you Luigi?
Nah, there ain't no Luigi. Well, there was, but he died, and I bought this place from his widow after a horse fell on me down ratting and busted my legs so I couldn't make a hand no more. Name's Weaver, Bert Weaver. What do you want? You're too well-dressed to be a bum looking for a handout, that's for damn sure.
Please, I'd like a table.
Sure. Just go around front. I'll put my waiter hat on.
No, you don't understand. I'd like to slip into the dining room from the kitchen, if that's possible.
Oh, I get it now. You're trailing somebody, ain't you?
I really can't explain.
That's all right, you don't have to. You got an honest face, amigo, so I'm gonna trust you. Who is it you don't want to see?
There is a young blonde woman, very attractive, wearing a blue dress and hat.
Yeah, I've seen her come in. She's been here before. She's your lady friend, is she? And you think she's stepping out on you?
Hardly.
Well, it's your business, not mine. Sure, I'll help you out. Let me take a look and see exactly where she's sitting.
Weaver motioned for Arturo to follow him into the kitchen, then went through a swinging door into the main room of the restaurant. Arturo indulged his curiosity and checked the pots on the stove. He was tempted to sample whatever was in them, but put that idea aside when he saw a rat scurry across the floor. The scrawny proprietor came back. He crooked a knobby finger at Arturo.
The lady's sitting in one of the booths up front. She can't see the kitchen door from where she is. Go out through this door and turn to your left. There's a table where you can sit and see part of the booth where she is.
Will I be able to see if anyone joins her?
Somebody already has. A couple of tough-looking hombres. Are they going to recognize you?
No, that's doubtful. Will I be close enough to hear what they're saying?
Not from that table. You'll have to get closer. If you do, there's a chance she'll spot you.
Well, that's a chance I'll have to take.
If Rose was plotting to kill Conrad, then he had to find out as much about her plans as he could. Arturo pushed through the swinging door into the main room of the restaurant. Arturo slipped into the booth Weaver had indicated first, so he could get a sense of the restaurant's layout and where Rose and her companions were sitting. The space was long and narrow, with booths along each wall and others sitting back to back and side by side up the middle, forming two aisles. About a fourth of them were occupied by customers eating Weaver's food. There were other booths along the front wall, and it was in one of those where Rose and two men sat, evidently holding an earnest, low-voiced conversation. Plates of food were on the table to make it look like they were there for a meal, but Arturo knew it was more than that. From his position, he could see Rose's blue gown and get a good look at the two men. Both were rough-faced, beard-stubbled individuals, one with a thatch of rusty red hair under a thumbed-back Stetson, the other man, burlier and more ape-like, with a derby crammed down on his head. He seemed to be doing more of the talking. The man with the cowboy hat leaned back against the booth's seat with an indolent expression on his face. He also wore a revolver and a tied-down holster. Arturo had been around enough rough frontiersmen to know that meant the man fancied himself to be slick on the draw. Maybe he was. Arturo seriously doubted the man was as fast as Conrad. Not that he wanted to put it to the test. The booth closest to the front in the center section was empty. Arturo thought if he could reach it without Rose seeing him, he might be able to overhear part of their conversation. He pulled his hat down lower so that it partially shielded his face, then stood up and moved quickly toward the first booth. But not so quickly it would draw attention to him, he hoped. He kept his head down, despite the urge to glance up and get a better look at Rose. When he reached the booth, he slid into it and pressed his back against the seat. The top of his head showed over the seat, but not enough for her to recognize him. He leaned closer and strained his ears to hear what they were saying. Rose's voice was too low for him to make out many of the words, but he suddenly heard her say something about the palace, the theater and gambling hall where the poker tournament was taking place. He knew she had to be talking about Conrad.
What time?
That had to be the man in the derby, Arturo thought.
There's no way of knowing. I'll have to figure it out.
Arturo's pulse quickened as his mind filled in the blanks he hadn't been able to hear. Rose had told the men there was no way of knowing when Conrad might leave the gambling hall. She would have to lure him out of the place. And when she did, Arturo had no doubt the two men would be waiting to gun him down. He had proof that Rose had been plotting against Conrad. They had been right to be suspicious of her. He needed to go to the police. His spirits fell as he realized the knowledge he had gained wasn't exactly proof. If he went to the law, it would be just his word against Rose's. She would deny everything. He would have to catch her in the act, which meant he would have to risk Conrad's life. He wasn't sure he could do that. Better to hurry to the palace and warn Conrad so he wouldn't walk blindly into the trap Rose was setting for him. He would wait for them to leave, then go out the back way and hurry to the gambling hall as fast as he could. Conrad would be sequestered in the private room where the games were taking place, but Arturo would get word to him somehow. Bat Masterson was in charge of things, Arturo recalled. He needed to talk to the famous ex-lawman. His nerves drew tighter and tighter as the trio in the front booth continued their conversation. He couldn't make out any of what they were saying, but he knew they were probably discussing exactly how they would go about carrying out the assassination they were planning. Finally, they stood up. Arturo heard them moving around. He hoped Rose wouldn't walk past the booth where he was sitting, look into it, and recognize him. Luck was with him. The front door of the restaurant opened, and he heard Rose leave. The two men strolled past him, and the man in the derby actually glanced at him, but neither of them had ever seen him before, so he wasn't worried about them recognizing him. They walked to the back of the place and paid Weaver for the food they'd had. The men left the restaurant without looking at Arturo as they went by. As soon as the door swung closed behind them, he was on his feet. He hurried to the back and found Weaver.
I'd like to go out through the kitchen, if that's all right.
Yeah, I figured you might want to do that. Find out what you wanted to know?
I hope so.
Arturo paused long enough to slip a double eagle out of his pocket. He pressed it into Weaver's hand.
This is for your trouble.
Well, it wasn't much trouble, but I'm mighty obliged to you, partner. Come back anytime you want to, and tell your friends about Luigi's.
Arturo thought that was highly unlikely, but he didn't take the time to say so. Once he was in the alley again, he headed cautiously for the street. He knew he needed to be careful. It was possible Rose was still around where she might see him. He would have to check both ways along the street before he stepped out. If he knew his way around Denver better, he might try some other route, but he was afraid he would get lost and fail to reach the palace in time to warn Conrad. A shape suddenly loomed out of the shadows in front of Arturo, a patch of deeper darkness that moved swiftly toward him and took on the dimensions of a man. The pistol Conrad had given him was tucked under his coat, but as he reached for it, a fist exploded against his jaw and sent him falling against the wall. Arturo struggled to remain conscious as two pairs of rough hands grabbed him and shoved him toward the street. A fog seemed to have descended over his eyes. He couldn't see much except shifting patterns of light and darkness.
Is this him?
Yes, I thought so.
Arturo's mind was stunned, but he recognized the voice of Rose Sullivan.
I told you I recognized his hat over the top of that booth. He had no reason to be there unless he was sneaking around spying on me.
What do you want us to do with him?
Put him in the carriage and bring him with us. He might come in handy. Especially if Brannon gets suspicious and doesn't want to cooperate. Just make sure he can't interfere.
Sure.
Something hard crashed against Arturo's skull with blinding force. He suddenly felt like he was tumbling forward into a deep, dark well.
Conrad Browning has to die tonight.
Conrad hadn't stretched out to go to sleep yet when a soft knock sounded on the door of the little room. His boots were off, but he still wore his trousers and shirt. Weary, he went over to the door.
Who is it?
Bat.
Knowing that Masterson wouldn't bother him unless it was for something important, Conrad opened the door.
Sorry to break in on you, Conrad. I see you hadn't gone to sleep yet. Good.
No, but I'm pretty tired, Bat. What's going on?
I got word there's a lady looking for you.
Honestly, Bat, I'm too tired right now to be thinking about women.
It's not like that. Although I must say, Conrad, you're too young to ever be too tired to think about women. This is that Miss Sullivan you're acquainted with from Ellery Hudson's office.
Rose? What the hell is she doing here?
She said something happened to your friend Vincenzo and she needs your help. She saw him on the street. A man had attacked him and robbed him. She says he's hurt.
Mixed emotions shot through Conrad. First and foremost among them was genuine worry for Arturo. He had planned to investigate Rose's background, and he could have been following her. It was entirely possible that a thief could have assaulted him. But Conrad also felt a nagging suspicion about Rose. Was this a trick of some sort, designed to lure him away from the poker tournament and out of the palace so another attempt could be made on his life? That was possible. But if Arturo actually was hurt, Conrad had to give Rose the benefit of the doubt. He had to play along and see what was really happening, but there was no reason he couldn't be careful.
Loan me a six-gun, Bat.
I'll do better than that. I'll come along with you.
No, whatever's going to happen, I want it to happen. I'm tired of not being sure about certain things.
Yeah, but if you're walking right into trouble...
That's why I asked for the gun.
Masterson reached under his coat and handed him one of the weapons from his shoulder holsters. It was a Smith & Wesson 38 caliber double-action revolver with a 4-inch barrel. Like most short-barreled guns, it wouldn't be very accurate at more than 20 feet or so, but it packed a fairly lethal punch. Conrad checked to make sure the hammer was on an empty chamber, then tucked the gun into the waistband of his trousers. He pulled his boots on and shrugged into his coat, leaving off the tie and his hat.
I'll be back by the time you're ready for the next round to begin.
Just be careful. You don't know what you're walking into out there.
Conrad nodded. He was well aware of the danger. Masterson came with him as he strode through the private room and into the main room of the gambling hall.
She's waiting for you in the lobby.
Conrad spotted Rose as he started down the broad marble staircase. She saw him too and hurried to meet him with an anxious expression on her face. She was waiting for him when he reached the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, Conrad!
Rose clutched at his arm.
I'm so glad I was able to find you. Your friend Arturo has been hurt.
What happened?
I was walking home a little while ago, and I heard someone cry out behind me. When I turned around to look, I saw Arturo fighting with a couple men. They must have been trying to rob him. I saw one of them reach under Arturo's coat and yank something out. What was he doing there, Conrad? Was he following me? Do you not trust me for some reason? Well, there's no time to worry about that now. They hit him in the head, and when he fell down, they ran away. I tried to help him, but he wouldn't wake up, and I couldn't find a policeman, and...
Settle down. Take a deep breath. Where's Arturo now?
There was a carriage passing by. I got the driver to stop and help me put Arturo inside. I was going to try and find a doctor, but then I realized we weren't far from this place, and I thought if I could talk to you, you'd know what to do.
Conrad nodded and took hold of her arm with his left hand.
Show me. We'll get Arturo the help he needs.
Oh, thank God.
Conrad wanted to believe Rose, but he couldn't take anything she said on faith. They left the palace, and he saw a carriage parked at the curb a short distance away. A short, broad-shouldered man in a derby hat stood there holding the reins of the team.
Did you find him, miss?
Yes, this is Mr. Browning.
Rose led Conrad toward the vehicle. Suddenly, the door to the carriage burst open, and Arturo tumbled out.
Conrad! It's a trap! Run!
A red-headed man in a Stetson appeared in the doorway of the carriage holding a gun. Smoke and flame geysered from the weapon's muzzle, and Arturo was thrown forward on the sidewalk as a slug slammed into him. Conrad's hand streaked to the gun in his waistband. The gunman dropped his gun and toppled out of the carriage, landing on the sidewalk near Arturo's sprawled body. Conrad whirled in the direction of the burly driver in the derby, but he was too late. The man had already dragged a gun from under his coat. It was lined up, ready to put a bullet through Conrad's head. Before the man could fire, another gun cracked, coming from the direction of the palace. The man staggered as blood sprayed from his hand, and he fell to the ground, hitting his head. With that done, Conrad looked around for Rose, but didn't see her. Now that the shooting seemed to be over, a crowd of curious onlookers was gathering. A man knelt beside Arturo, who hadn't moved since he had fallen to the sidewalk after being shot. Conrad ran over and dropped to a knee beside his friend. He glanced at the red-headed gunman, who lay not far away. Judging by the pool of blood forming under the man, he no longer represented a threat.
Can you tell how bad he's hurt?
The man next to Arturo glanced up at Conrad.
Are you a doctor?
No.
Well, I am, so give me some room. If you want to help, let's roll him onto his right side. The wound seems to be in his left arm.
Carefully, Conrad and the doctor moved Arturo onto his right side. The doctor took a folding knife from his pocket and used it to cut away the coat sleeve and then the shirt sleeve, laying bare Arturo's arm. The upper arm had two ugly puckered holes in it, about halfway between the shoulder and the elbow, where the bullet had passed through the flesh.
Well, your friend is lucky. Looks like the slug missed the bone. Once we get the bleeding stopped and clean up that wound, I'll be able to get a better idea of how badly he's hurt. It's possible there could be some nerve damage that would keep him from using the arm properly in the future.
That was a worrisome prospect, Conrad thought, but still a lot better than it could have been.
Well, he'll have to be taken to the hospital.
Do whatever you need to do, Doctor. I'll see to it that all the expenses are covered. Money is no object.
We'll get the best care I know how to give him, either way.
The doctor glanced toward the red-headed gunman.
Yeah, I'm afraid that one is beyond help.
Considering that he shot Arturo here and tried to kill me, I'm not going to lose any sleep over that.
Confident Arturo was in good hands, Conrad straightened and went back over to the man he had knocked out. He covered the burly carriage driver with the Smith & Wesson as he started to stir. The man rolled onto his side. Struggling to prop himself up on an elbow, he shook his head as if he were trying to clear away the cobwebs that clogged his brain. Then he looked up at Conrad and blinked in surprise as he found himself staring down the barrel of the .38.
Don't shoot, mister.
Why not? You and your friend tried to kill me.
Hey, it was just a job. I swear, it was nothing personal.
And that's supposed to make me less inclined to put a bullet through your brain?
I'll do anything you want.
Tell me who hired you.
It was the girl. That blonde girl, the one that went into the palace to lure you out here. I swear it, mister. I got nothing against you.
Do you know her name?
She never told Riley and me her name. She got word to us through a bartender we know. A fellow who knows that we do jobs like this.
You mean who knows that you're hired killers?
I ain't saying nothing else.
Conrad eared back the .38's hammer.
Where can I find her? The blonde who hired you.
I got no idea, and that's the truth, I swear it. All Riley and me knew was where to meet her and talk about the job.
How did you wind up with my friend as your prisoner?
That skinny hombre? He was spying on the girl. She spotted him in the place where we met and had me and Riley lay wait for him outside in the alley.
If he dies, you'll hang. I'll see to it.
That ain't fair! I never shot him!
Your partner did, and he's dead. That just leaves you to swing for it.
Mister, put down that gun and step away from that man!
Conrad glanced over his shoulder and saw that a couple of uniformed Denver policemen had arrived on the scene. He lowered the Smith & Wesson and nodded toward the man lying at the edge of the street.
This man and another one tried to kill me. The other one is lying over there. I shot him in self-defense. There were plenty of people on the street. I'm sure you can find witnesses to back up my story.
That's fine, but until then you'd better hand over that gun.
Conrad hesitated. He didn't want to be unarmed. But before it became an issue, Bat Masterson walked up.
I can testify that my friend Mr. Browning is telling the truth. I saw what happened with my own eyes.
Are you sure about that, Mr. Masterson?
I'm certain.
The policemen looked at each other. One of them shrugged.
In that case,
my friend was wounded in the shooting.
Conrad pointed toward Arturo. The doctor had cut strips off of Arturo's shirt and wadded them up to use as pads to try to stop the bleeding.
He needs to get to a hospital.
We'll send for an ambulance wagon, and I'll take this one into custody.
If you need to talk to Mr. Browning or me, we'll be in the palace.
All right, Mr. Masterson, that's fine.
Masterson put a hand on Conrad's arm. They turned toward the theater and gambling parlor and started walking.
You followed me out anyway, didn't you, Bat?
It's a good thing I did, I'd say.
I knew when I saw the shot crease that bastard's hand and make him drop his gun. It had to be you fired
it. You're giving me too much credit, Conrad. That shot was pure luck. I was aiming at his body. I wanted to ventilate the son of a bitch.
Luck or skill, I'm glad you showed up when you did. He had a bead on me.
Let's get a drink, and you can tell me what this is all about. I assume it has something to do with those missing children of yours.
It must.
A short time later, they sat at a table in a small private room off the gambling hall with a bottle of whiskey on the table between them. Conrad sipped the drink Masterson had poured. He still had a poker tournament to take part in, and he didn't want to muddle his brain.
Did you see where Rose went to during the fight?
As soon as things went sour, I saw her run for it. But she gave me the slip. What's going on here, Conrad? I thought she worked for Ellery Hudson.
Conrad explained the suspicions he'd started having about Rose. The frown on Masterson's face deepened as he listened.
How could Pamela Tarleton have planned so far ahead as to set up all of this?
Pamela was a genius when it came to revenge. I've seen plenty of evidence of that over the past few months. I'm sure she tried to plan for every contingency she could think of. I've only seen the schemes that actually came to fruition.
This Rose Sullivan seems to be almost as cunning. She came close to killing you several times.
I know.
Now that you've exposed her for what she is, you shouldn't have to worry about her anymore.
Conrad hoped that was the case, but he wasn't so sure. Certainly, it wouldn't be as easy for her to try to kill him, but she had gotten away. He wasn't convinced she would just give up. Pamela must have paid her to kill him. Rose, or whatever her real name was, might feel she had to honor that bargain.
What are you going to do now?
Find out where Arturo was taken and make sure he's all right. Then I'll take my place in the tournament again. Have there been any more winners?
A couple. You really intend to carry on with it?
I know there's a connection between McKinney and Pamela. I still have a hunch he knows more than he's been willing to admit so far. When the time comes for the next round, I'll be ready.
It took only a short while to discover where Arturo had been taken. When Conrad arrived at the hospital, he learned the bullet wound in Arturo's arm had been cleaned and dressed, and thick rolls of bandages were wrapped around the arm, making it hard for him to move it. Of course, he didn't need to be moving it anyway, the doctor said. He also had a bandage around his head, where he had an ugly gash from the blow of the gun butt that had knocked him out. The shock of being shot had caused him to pass out, and the loss of blood had kept him unconscious for a while. Once his senses returned, Conrad was able to talk to him, although the doctor cautioned him to make it short and not tire the patient too much. Arturo explained how he followed Rose to the grimy little restaurant called Luigi's and eavesdropped on her conversation with the two hired gunmen. His story agreed with what Conrad had been told by the derby-wearing killer.
I'm sorry, Conrad. I thought I was being so sly and resourceful by following Miss Sullivan. Instead, I walked right into a trap that could have wound up getting both of us killed.
You got hurt a lot worse than I did, and yet you still tried to warn me.
When I regained consciousness in the carriage, I realized it was still moving, so I thought they probably hadn't carried out their plan yet. I stayed absolutely still and didn't let them see that I was awake. Then, when we stopped and Miss Sullivan got out, I was sure they hadn't struck yet. I waited until I heard her voice again, and that's when I made my move, as they say.
I heard that fella in the carriage let out a howl. What'd you do, bite him?
Actually, yes. When I tried to get out the door, he grabbed me, and one of his hands was within reach. I hated to do something so unsanitary, but it seemed like the best course of action at the time.
Maybe you won't catch hydrophobia from him, even though he was a skunk, sure enough.
He yelled and let me go, and I made it out the door and called to you. Then I heard a shot, and then that's the last thing I remember until I woke up here.
I thought he'd killed you. It was a big relief when I found out he hadn't.
For me as well. I owe you an apology, though, sir.
How do you figure that?
I allowed myself to be captured so that I could be used against you. Not only that, but now Miss Sullivan has escaped.
It's not your fault she got away. And at least now we know for sure that she's been plotting against me.
But wouldn't it have been better if she wasn't aware you were onto her schemes?
Who knows? This way there's no chance of her fooling any of us again. The one who really lost out is Ellery Hudson. I'll have to find somebody to take her place.
Conrad returned to the palace and found Masterson in the room where the tournament was taking place. Only one game was still going on, with two men each doggedly trying to clean out the other. Some of the players were sitting around drinking, eating, or dozing. Masterson was talking to several of them, but he broke off the conversation and came over as soon as he spotted Conrad.
How's Arturo?
Doing as well as can be expected. He has a headache from being pistol-whipped, and that wounded arm will keep him in the hospital for several days. But it looks like he's going to be all right.
That's good news. How about you?
Other than being a little tired, I'm fine.
We can do something about that. The room you used before is empty. I made sure of that. Go get some sleep. It'll be a while before the next round of games gets underway.
I don't want any special favors, Bat.
And I'm not offering you any. You're one of the winners. I want you to be rested and at the top of your game when play resumes. Anyway, don't be so damn stiff-necked. If somebody offers you a little help, which I'm not, there's nothing wrong with accepting it. Your father's the same way, always determined to go it alone.
All right. Thanks, I am tired.
Go turn in. I'll see to it that you're awake in plenty of time for the next round.
Grateful for the respite, Conrad went along the hall to the room and stretched out on the bed as soon as he had kicked off his boots and taken off his coat. Despite everything on his mind that he thought might keep him awake, he was asleep as soon as he closed his eyes. A soft rapping on the door woke him later. He sat up and swung his legs off the bed. He went to the door and opened it, finding one of the pretty hostesses standing there. She smiled at him.
Mr. Masterson wanted to let you know the next round of the tournament will begin in about an hour, Mr. Browning.
Thank you. Do you know what time it is?
Almost 6 o'clock, sir.
In the morning?
No, sir. 6 o'clock in the evening.
Oh. Thank you. Could I get a basin of hot water?
Certainly, sir.
After he had shaved and cleaned up, Conrad slapped as many of the wrinkles out of his clothes as he could and went to join the others in the tournament room. He found a sense of anticipation in the air. Even though only 8 players would be continuing the game, many of the men who had taken part planned to stay and watch. Bat Masterson was standing beside the table of food and drink. Conrad went over to join him and began filling a plate. One of the hostesses poured a cup of coffee for him.
Feeling better?
Almost human again.
You were worn out, and I can't say as I blame you. By the way, I paid a visit to the hospital earlier to check on Arturo.
How's he doing?
Trying to tell the doctors and the nurses how they can run things better. That fellow's got opinions on just about everything, doesn't he?
And he doesn't mind expressing them. I'm glad to hear it. It sounds like he's getting back to normal in a hurry.
I took the liberty of hiring some men to sit outside his room and keep an eye on him.
Guards, you mean?
That's right. I don't think that woman would try to hurt him while he's in the hospital, but you never know.
You're right. That was smart of you, Bat, and I appreciate it. Arturo can testify that she was trying to have me killed. Of course. So can the man who was arrested, not to mention you and me.
She can't get to him in jail, or to us. Arturo was out there defenseless. Not anymore, though.
The food and coffee made Conrad feel better, not to mention what Masterson had told him about Arturo. He looked around the room, searching for Rance McKinney, but didn't see him. With a slight feeling of alarm, he asked where the rancher was.
One of his men showed up a few hours ago with a message from his foreman. Some sort of trouble at the ranch, I expect. Rance said he'd have to go and take care of it, but insisted he'd be back in time to take part in the next round. Come to think of it, he should have been here by now. I warned him if he wasn't here when we were ready, he might have to forfeit his place in the tournament.
You can't do that, Bat.
I know why you want him to be here, Conrad, but there are other players who put up a lot of money to take part in this. I have a responsibility to them, too.
I know that. I just hate to think that it's all been for nothing.
You might wind up winning a lot of money, but that doesn't really mean a lot to you, does it?
Conrad didn't answer. He didn't have to. A few minutes later, his worry eased as Rance McKinney came into the room. The rancher still wore his black outfit and the black and white cowhide vest. Obviously, he hadn't taken advantage of the opportunity to get some fresh clothes. Conrad supposed he had been busy with whatever had taken him away from the palace in the first place. He didn't really care what that might be. The important thing was that McKinney was back. Bat Masterson had the 8 big winners from the first round come forward. Conrad didn't know any of them except McKinney. One of the hostesses brought out the same big white hat that they had used for drawing lots a couple of days earlier.
As per the rules of the tournament established before it began, in this round, there will be 2 tables with 4 players at each one. Step up, gentlemen, and draw for your table assignments.
Conrad wished that Masterson could just put him at the same table as McKinney, but that would go against the rules everyone else had accepted, and it would look suspicious as well. Even so, he had to suppress a groan of disappointment as he drew a chip marked with a numeral 1, and McKinney drew one, putting him at the second table.
Take your seats, gentlemen, and best of luck to you all.
The other 3 men at Conrad's table introduced themselves as David Carruthers, Adam Neville, and Stephen Gray. Carruthers was a tall, distinguished man with a fringe of white hair around his head and a white goatee. Neville was lean and dark-faced, with deep-set eyes. Gray matched his name, a bland, colorless man, but Conrad knew not to underestimate him because of that. All three men had triumphed in the first round of the tournament, so he knew they had to be excellent card players. They knew the same thing about him and would be approaching him warily. Hand after hand went by, with the pots remaining fairly small. Nobody won or lost much. Conrad and Carruthers were slightly ahead, but that could change in a matter of minutes. Concentrating on his cards and his game didn't leave Conrad any attention for the other game, so he didn't know how McKinney was doing. All he could do was hope that he and McKinney emerged as the winners so they would face off in the final showdown. Luck had been running against Conrad lately, not in his cards, but in the things that really mattered to him, so he hoped fate would look kindly on him. By the time the four men took a break at midnight, Carruthers had pulled farther ahead. Conrad was about even. Neville and Gray were struggling a little more. The pots had increased gradually. It wouldn't take 2 days to determine the winner, Conrad sensed. The game might be over by morning. Bat Masterson came over to him.
The cards seem to be running pretty good for you, Conrad.
Not as good as they are for Carruthers.
David's a fine player, all right, but so are the other two. They could get right back into this with just a few lucky hands.
Conrad was well aware of that. As the stakes grew higher, so did the potential for sudden shifts in the game. Play resumed and continued on through the wee hours of the morning. Neville's luck never turned. Around 4 o'clock, he threw in his cards at the end of a hand.
Well, that's it for me. I'm busted.
Too bad. You played a good game, Adam.
Not good enough.
There was no disputing that. Neville shoved back his chair and left the table.
Why don't we take a break, gentlemen?
Conrad and Gray nodded in agreement at Carruthers' suggestion. Masterson wasn't around, so Conrad got a cup of coffee and sat down on one of the armchairs, stretching out his legs in front of him. Play continued at the other table, so without being too obvious about it, he watched Rance McKinney. The rancher was betting heavily, and the stacks of chips in front of him were smaller than those in front of the other players. Conrad felt like sighing. If it kept up, he wouldn't be facing McKinney in the final round. In that case, he wouldn't have lost anything except some time, and as Masterson had pointed out, he might be considerably wealthier when all was said and done. But money didn't mean anything to him. The only important thing was finding his children. When he and Carruthers and Gray resumed their game, a certain recklessness began to crop up in Conrad's play. He was aware of it and tried to rein it in, but the stress of the past few days, the past few months, really, had all his nerves on edge. He had been prepared to spend the rest of his life as Kid Morgan, drifting from place to place, a loner and a fast gun. But then had come the hellish ordeal in Hellgate Prison, followed by the discovery of the plot against him by Roger Tarleton, Pamela's cousin, and then the most shattering blow of all, the revelation of the twins' existence and their role in Pamela's evil plan. Since then, he had carried out his search for them, only to encounter deadly traps almost every step of the way. It was too much for one man to cope with, he thought, especially for a man who had already come to grips with his wife's murder. He was tired of it. He wanted it over. He wanted to be united with his children now, so he could put all the dreadful past behind him. Unfortunately, life didn't seem to be paying any attention to what he wanted. It went along on its bitter way, dealing out more heartbreak and tragedy. Conrad pushed $20,000 worth of chips in the center of the table to call a bet. He had two pair in his hand, nines and fives, but Carruthers took the pot with a flush. Conrad's jaw tightened as he studied his chips. He still had a good stake, plenty big enough for him to continue, but he couldn't afford to lose any more on careless, distracted plays. He saw the faint smile on Carruthers' face. The man thought he was losing his edge and would be easy pickings from here on out. Carruthers was about to find out just how wrong he could be. Coolly, almost emotionlessly, Conrad continued playing, and the chips began to flow back in his direction. It was a trickle at first, then a steady stream. He folded when he didn't have a good hand, stuck with his cards when he did, bluffed every now and then just to prove he could. Surprisingly, Stephen Gray matched him almost hand for hand, and it was Carruthers who began to be squeezed out. Conrad saw the desperation growing on the man's face. He had lost track of the time. Was it morning yet? He didn't know and didn't care. Bat Masterson was back in the room, moving from table to table to watch the play. Conrad wondered fleetingly how McKinney was doing, but he didn't take his eyes off his cards and his fellow players to check. He tried to fill a straight and failed, winding up with a pair of threes to show for it. When he looked across the table at Carruthers, who had about 20,000 left, instinct told him to see what would happen if he raised.
5,000.
Gray saw the bet and upped it five more. Carruthers stayed in.
I'll see that, and 10,000 more.
Conrad pushed the stack of chips to the center of the table. Gray shook his head and tossed in his cards. Carruthers had gone pale at the size of the bet. It would cost him everything he had left to call. But if he folded, it would be a simple matter for one of the others to force him out on the next hand. That would just be postponing the inevitable.
Call.
He pushed in everything. Conrad put down his pair of threes.
Oh.
Carruthers' fingers tightened on his cards until they started to bend. With a visible effort, he forced his hand open and dropped the cards face up on the table. A pair of twos, a seven, a jack, and a queen.
I thought you were bluffing.
I was. I just wanted to see how far I could push you.
And you wound up pushing me all the way out. Well played, Browning. I didn't think you had it in you. Your nerves must be made of steel. Very good.
Carruthers pushed back his chair.
Congratulations to you both. I'll be interested to see what happens now.
Masterson came over, shook hands with Carruthers, and invited him to have a drink. Conrad and Gray stood up and stretched. Conrad checked the time. It was a little after 8 o'clock. In the morning, he supposed. He didn't think he had lost that much track of the time. A glance at the other table showed him that only two players remained there, and to his surprise, one of them was Rance McKinney. Obviously, the rancher had staged a comeback. He and the other man looked to be about even. Conrad went over to Masterson.
Do you think you could send someone over to the hospital to see how Arturo is doing, Ben?
I figured you'd want to know, so I did better than that. I stopped there myself a little while ago. It's before visiting hours, so they didn't want to let me see him at first, but I can be pretty persuasive when I want to.
Plus, no one wants to say no to the famous Bat Masterson.
What's the point of having a reputation if you can't take advantage of it?
So how's Arturo?
Considerably stronger. They'll probably let him out of there in another day or two. He'll have to wear a sling for a while, the doctor says, but his arm should be all right.
Conrad nodded as a feeling of relief went through him. Their journey had turned out to be more dangerous for Arturo than Conrad had intended.
Just you and Gray now, eh?
That's right.
And it's down to McKinney and Jack Lawler at the other table. Things may work out for you yet, Conrad.
I hope so. I've got a lot riding on this.
A short time later, he and Stephen Gray returned to the table. Since Conrad had won the last hand, he had the deal. He called five-card draw. After he'd won a couple of small pots, Gray took the next hand and changed the game to seven-card stud. Conrad wasn't as comfortable with that, but he had no choice but to go along. Gray won several hands in a row, and Conrad felt his nerves growing taut again. As if sensing that, Gray started pushing with bigger and bigger raises. Conrad told himself to settle down. At the other table, Rance McKinney suddenly burst out.
Yes! Woo! Hot damn!
Conrad glanced over and saw the dejected slump of the other player's shoulders. The man shook his head and spread his hands, indicating that he was out.
How about it, Browning? Are you in?
Conrad saw the arrogant grin on McKinney's face. He turned to look at the cards in his hand, and once again the blood in his veins seemed like ice water.
Oh, I'm in.